Ellis East Elementary walkthrough, May 18th. It was odd that Marianne was not on the playground. At any rate, I'm climbing the front staircase. Unlike the side and back staircases, these stairs are made out of wood. My knowledge of architecture tells me that they're solid, but as a child, I always found them to be very rickety. I think it's because they're incredibly creaky. The stairs are painted gray with an intricate railing that is painted a pale blue. I've reached the top of the staircase. I am directly underneath the tower, and in front of me there is a large window overlooking the schoolyard. If I face the hallway, this portion of the building has polished wooden floors with two classrooms on either side of the hall, four in total, and a small room at the very end of the hallway opposite the staircase, which was, at one time, the Title I classroom. At the end of the wooden floor is the back portion of the building, which I have already explored, where I find the library, the music room, etc. Past the last two classrooms on either side of the hall, the floor angles down to meet the back half of the building, creating a 6-foot slope. When I was a student here, we had a sleepover for third grade graduation. We would slide down the slope in our sleeping bags. I have walked down the hallway, and I'm facing the hall from the opposite direction. To my right is classroom 2A. I am entering the classroom. This room, like many others, is painted a glossy white. This room is unique in that, aside from the windows lining the eastern wall, there are black slate chalkboards wrapping all the way around the room. The chalkboards are covered with children's drawings, which range from cute to unsettling. Audio diary of Dr. Anna Georgina Plume, Assistant Professor of Architectural History, Hollingsworth University. July 24th, 8 a.m. Recorded over breakfast in the formal dining room. Billy Oker also in attendance. It's been 3 days since we were driven out of the school in the middle of the night. We've had an electrician in to move the circuit breaker, and fortunately that was a pretty easy task.
Do we know if it would normally be that easy? Or if the school helped?
I didn't think to ask. I hope things will get better now that the power is out of Algernon's hands. Literally.
So what's next?
We have to find a way to banish him again. Hopefully for good. Whatever they've done in the past hasn't worked entirely.
So what do we do?
A few things we can do. First, we need to find answers in the records. What can we learn from the history of the school, what's been written down, etc. Second, we need to focus on mapping the building, getting a handle on this physical space. That's crucial, especially as I tend to find secret passages in hidden alcoves. Third, I need to get answers from my family. I don't know how much my father knows, but Nana Plume has to know something. Finally, I need to find Geneva's, great-grandma Vivi's, necklace, which I'm going to assume is also Sophia's necklace.
Audio diary of Dr. Anna Georgina Plume, July 24th, 10 a.m. It has been brought to my attention that each of the boxes from Melinda Basil, local librarian with an extreme willingness to help and mediocre document preservation skills, has corresponded with a generation of my family. Helena Reeve, and by extension, Lucy Hobbs, were my third great-grandmothers. Elizabeth Reeve Messinger, my great-great-grandmother. Geneva Anderson, my great-grandmother. So it stands to reason the next box would be Nana Plume. And this would be Field Notes of Helen Plume, PhD student in Archival Studies, June 1st, 1954. Returning to Ellis Field for the summer to begin research into the records held in my mother's library. Must be cautious not to arouse suspicion of the contents of her true library, as it is still believed to be merely a school library by the public. The real benefit of the library is its extensive archive on the community of Ellis Field dating back almost 70 years since the founding of the Normal College in the building where the school now stands. Those records are currently being kept in the defunct ballroom on the third floor. While it is not custom to remark on personal matters in field notes, it is worth noting that I am returning home to three generations of women in my family. My mother has taken over the library in the retirement of my grandmother Elizabeth, and along with great-grandma Helena and great-grandma Lucy, they all live across the street in the house where I grew up. A.G. Plume commentary. The house across the street, as has been noted in Geneva's account, is a grand Victorian with four proper stories. It has been owned by the town since the 1980s and serves as a community art and music center. It was donated to the town after my father moved out of the house and my grandparents decided to downsize. Resuming field notes. Arthur is with me, which will be a surprise given that I have not mentioned him in any of my letters or phone calls home. I know they think I am too young to marry, and to surprise them with the news that we have already wed will not land well. But for my 19 years, I have a college degree and a year of a PhD program behind me, so I feel like I am firmly established in my life. A.G. Plume commentary. As someone who regularly works with both 19-year-olds and second-year PhD students, I'm with her family on this one. Though that is my grandfather she's talking about, and they were together for 60 years, so I'll withhold my judgment. Resuming field notes. The train is pulling into the station at Hayden's Landing. I will report more later. Postscript. It did not go well. June 3rd, 1954. Spent the morning in Mother's Archives in the third floor ballroom. Something is wrong with the school. The light from the large windows overlooking the ballroom keeps shifting, but it looks like there are trees covering the windows, which is not possible. At home, everyone is tense, and I'm beginning to suspect that my o'erhasty marriage is not the only issue. Arthur is trying to win their approval by making every possible repair to the house. Great-grandma Lucy has warmed up to him, but the other three remain stern. Overall, the work in the archive should keep me occupied till we have to return to D.C. in August. June 4th, 1954. A distressed young woman rushed up the stairs this afternoon to the third floor. She was incoherent, talking about someone named Algernon claiming he had to be stopped. Mother then appeared with great-grandma Lucy, and the two of them tried to calm the woman down, taking her down to the school library for a cup of tea. Strangely, I believe I have seen this woman before around the school when I was a child, but it cannot possibly be. She has not aged in the decades since I saw her last. I will inquire after the family to determine if perhaps she has a younger sister. June 5th, 1954. I have learned nothing of the woman from yesterday, but today my mother introduced me to Sophia, a woman in her mid-30s who ostensibly works in the school, though no one can say what her job is exactly. As far as I can tell, she is an art teacher who also provides first aid. That cannot possibly be correct. A.G. Plume commentary. Sophia? Well, that settles at least one matter.
If you give a dog a donut, my word, that franchise has gone off the rails.
Sophia, what brings you here? And why didn't you say you knew my grandmother?
Oh, I just thought I would look in on the library. I've fully recovered from our recent scare. And I assumed you did the math. Anyone who spent a significant amount of time in this building, I know.
That had to be scary for you. We're trying to find the necklace, but any help you can offer.
I don't know. I'm not trying to be cryptic. I simply don't remember. I know it exists, but it is a hazy dream, and I can't find it.
Well, we're on it. Wait, are you dressed up?
I have a date.
Is that really ethical? You being the sentience of the building and not, like, an actual person? And what are the rules on where you can go?
I can pretty much wander freely around Ellisfield. And as for the date, it's with the consciousness of the three-story neoclassical mansion over on East Chestnut Street.
I'm not sure what to do with that information. Does every building have one of you?
No, but the buildings within half a mile of here that were standing when I came into being also have a form like me.
And you get together?
Some of us. The church on Elm Street is kind of a snob, but please keep looking. I've been feeling lightheaded a lot these days. I'm worried. Whatever is happening is making me sick. And I have a feeling I'm not the only one. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got a movie to catch.
What kind of movie does the consciousness of two buildings watch? And she's gone. Never going to get used to the disappearing.
Audio diary of Billy. I've been given the assignment of looking through the top floor for possible leads for where the alleged necklace could be hidden. This is a real needle in the haystack sort of scenario. So I've been wandering around looking for any place someone might hide something in this building. This very large building, which hundreds of people have passed through over 100 years. I've mostly just been walking up and down the hallway looking for loose floorboards. No luck. They say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. So, what's the opposite of that? Maybe if I look up? Whoa. Eureka! I am standing under a window at the end of the hall, the one that looks out over the front entrance to the school. There appears to be a trap door above me. It would lead up to the tower, I think. Let me get a ladder and investigate.
Recipe notes, Anna Georgina Plume. How to make the perfect tea latte. Take a teaspoon of your favorite loose Earl Grey tea, a half teaspoon of rose petals, and a half teaspoon of lavender. Make the tea using half a cup boiling water and steep the leaves according with the directions on your loose tea. You need half a cup of plant milk, I prefer oat milk, and a teaspoon of vanilla extract and honey or agave syrup. The amount depends on your desired sweetness. Or you could just use sweetened vanilla-flavored plant milk if you want to skip the other ingredients. Heat the milk in the pan until it reaches a temperature of 150 degrees. It won't be boiling, but it will start to simmer a little. If you don't have a milk frother, you can use a French press, pumping it about 20 times until the milk is nice and the desired frothiness. And then you can pour it into your steeped tea and enjoy. The perfect drink for exploring the archives or taking on the existential threat of the angry man who died in your basement. Audio diary of Dr. Anna Georgina Plume, July 24th, 7 p.m. I don't know why, but I felt the need to ride the carousel. It stopped spinning backwards a while ago. Daryl figured out how to fix it at Gazebo Fest. At least it seems so. This is nice. We go up, we go down. We go up, we go down again. We go... Speeding up now, this can't be good. Let's see if I can get off of here. Hey now, slow back down, please. Oof. Let's see, nothing feels broken. Nothing else, at least, given the left arm scenario. I'm just on the platform of the carousel now. Maybe I can roll off.
I need you to come to me, my child.
Audio diary of Dr. Anna Georgina Plume. I am unsure of the date or time. I'm not sure where I am. It looks like I'm still in the building. The floors are the same, but this is a hallway I've never seen before. It's more narrow, it's darker, there is rich maroon wallpaper. There's a room to my right, it looks like an old study. It's filled with ferns. If I look out to the end of the hallway, it opens to a large room. Wait, I feel like I have been here before. This is the third floor from my dream. How? I should sit down. I'm feeling very tired and woozy all of a sudden. Ellis East Elementary walkthrough, May 18th. The floors are the same wood we've seen throughout the building. Underneath the blackboard on the northern and southern walls, the two walls not interrupted by windows or the door, there is a low bookcase. It is empty. There are a few student desks in the southeast corner of the room, and a paisley floor rug, which covers most of the floor. There is what I assume is student artwork, a series of paintings on paper in a childish hand that get darker and more unsettling as they go. It looks like someone going down into a basement. There is a display-type shelf in the corner lined with student books and a few boxes of reading textbooks beside it. Hey, I remember this one. Miss Kitten's Magical Journey. This was our second grade reading textbook. Moving along, there is a symbol on the chalkboard with a half circle facing the ground. On the right end of the half circle, there is a plus sign. Now it is time to cross the hall and explore classroom 2B. Lavender Evening Fog is a fiction podcast. This episode was written by Victoria Dickman-Burnett, direction and script supervision by Ben Baird, produced, mixed, and edited by Nick Federinko, with additional editing by Victoria Dickman-Burnett. Executive producers are Ben Baird and Victoria Dickman-Burnett. The voice of Anna Georgina Plume is Victoria Dickman-Burnett. The voice of Billy is Nick Federinko. The voice of Sophia is Amy Yap. The mysterious voice is Catherine Falk. The Lavender Evening Fog logo was designed by Allison Dickman, and Ms. Bitey, our carousel opossum, was designed by Matt Lowe. This episode is brought to you by the Ellis Field Gazebo Commission. Ellis Field, Ohio, the gazebo capital of the Midwest. We mean guzzy business. This episode pairs well with pumpkin spice black tea, because it is indeed the season.